Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 74-year-old Robert Godwin was walking down a Cleveland-area street collecting cans when Steve Stevens stopped him, shot him, and then uploaded the video of that killing to Facebook. A manhunt for Stevens ended yesterday with Stevens fatally shooting himself. But on the internet, the video lives on. Facebook faces another round of criticism as it wrestles with the role and responsibility of social media here. This hour, On Point, violent crime streamed and videoed on Facebook and what to do about it. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is Facebook's responsibility here? What should it do? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Cleveland, Ohio, is Chris Wernofsky, criminal justice editor at cleveland.com. He's been all over the story of the murder and the manhunt that came to a close yesterday. Chris, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So it was Pennsylvania where they finally found this man. Was the fact that this had been on Facebook instrumental in them tracking him down?
It doesn't appear to be that way. I think that I think maybe the fact that this story was on Facebook, it brought a lot more attention to it. I think if you look at any number of murders that we have in this city, and we certainly have quite a few, this one drew the attention because of the viral nature of it. So I think maybe, you know, in the long scheme of things, yes, there was some, you know, Facebook did play some role in that, but I think as in any manhunt, once the information about the car and the information about who he was went out, I mean, you know, these McDonald's employees that spotted his car and called the police, you know, I think that that's something that could happen just in any sort of murder. I think that, but what is certainly unique here is the way that this sort of captured the attention because of the viral nature of it. I mean, we rarely do we ever have to look at a random street murder in the face and examine it that way. And it's just unusual and still kind of shocking to a lot of people here.
What's been learned about that encounter in McDonald's? Did they stall to keep him there? Did they simply call the police and say they thought they had seen him? What happened there?
Apparently he pulled in and asked, he ordered some chicken nuggets and an order of fries. And one of the employees, and this is all coming from the police, one of the employees spotted him and recognized him. And they told him that he was going to have to wait a little bit for his fries. He said they just dropped some fresh fries in the grease and they were going to have to, he'd have to pull out and wait for a minute. And then he just kind of took off. And by the time he took off, the troopers were already on their way, and he led them on a chase for, I think, a little less than 2 miles, and then they rammed his car, and as they approached him, he shot himself.
What is known about Steve Stevens at this point? People keep digging. What do we know about him?
It's unusual. His background is so unusual because it doesn't really fit the MO of a lot of what you consider like traditional, both like domestic violence and random murders, because the situation here, and we had a story about this morning, you know, involves him killing somebody at random as some sort of retribution against his estranged girlfriend. But everything about him that has been told to us up to this point has been relatively glowing. He's worked with children. He was a youth, he worked at an organization that deals with foster children here. And, you know, you have to pass mental fitness, I assume mental fitness background checks and at least some kind of criminal background check. I mean, he has no criminal background at all outside of a couple of traffic tickets. And, you know, he went to college. He seemed to have a lot going for him. The only real, you know, problem that he had seemed to be financial. You know, he had a gambling problem that he spoke about quite a bit in some of his Facebook posts. And He was evicted from his apartment earlier this year. And so it seemed like he was having some issues with finances, which, anybody who lived through the recession, a lot of us went through that. So it's so strange. His profile just doesn't seem to fit something so strange and unusual as this.
It wasn't only the video of the killing that went to Facebook, but it was actually part of a phone conversation that Steve Stevens had with a friend of his on the same day as the murder, a day when he claimed he'd killed 13 people. He Facebook Lived this phone call, streaming live to Facebook. And here's a little bit of that sound. This is the murderer talking on the phone to a friend.
I just snapped, dog. I just killed 13 people, man. That's what I did. I killed 13 people. And I'm about to keep killing until they catch me.
I'm about to keep killing until they catch me. That put law enforcement on super high alert. What kind of resources were put against this challenge, Chris?
I mean, they basically threw everything at it. It's rare that we have, our FBI head of our regional FBI coming out and addressing, a street murder like this. And when something like this not only captures, the fear of just random citizens, I think, the law enforcement here basically throw, every resource they have at it. In the early part of it, there were helicopters, there were, everybody was scouring the city. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed as if he had sort of moved away from the city. And as the manhunt expanded, obviously law enforcement throughout the state and through neighboring states were sort of put on alert about this. So, there were a lot of resources going into this. You don't want to be, police don't want to be in a position where a man is making a threat that he's going to kill, a ton of other people until they catch him and not at least appear like they're being vigilant. So it's, for whatever cost they threw at it, I'm sure the good taxpayers of this county will forgive it. But there was a lot of resources put into it.
And of course, Facebook, right in the middle of this, him face, streaming live there, his conversation about what he intended to do, what he had done, the family of Robert Godwin learning about this via Facebook. Of course, it all came out on Easter Sunday. On the next day, the daughter, Nadia Godwin, talked with CNN, described what it was like finding out about her father's murder, that it was put on Facebook.
Everybody started calling me and texting me, did you see that video? And I'm like, what are y'all talking about? And my family started calling me, and at first I was angry. I'm like, why would they do that to my dad? Why would you put it online? Like, I couldn't believe it was my dad.
He seemed like such a sweet man in the bit of that I've seen. His son, his daughter there, here's his son, Robbie Miller, angry about the posting to Facebook.
The man who videotaped my father getting shot stripped him of his dignity. Yes. Stripped him of his dignity. And to post it online for the whole world to see, I'm just angry.
Angry, understandably. Mourning, no doubt. And the whole world wondering what to do about this. The Cleveland police chief, and I'm sure you heard this, Chris, Calvin Williams, at a press conference yesterday saying the video of that shooting should not have been on social media.
This is something that should not have been shared around the world, period. And, our kids, although they should not have seen this, I'm sure a lot have, they need to take this as a lesson. We can't do this in this country. We just can't do it.
But we do. We have beatings, sexual assault, rape, now murder here. What do the local police feel like, Chris? They must feel kind of helpless. I mean, here's Facebook, giant global corporation doing what it does, and they're dealing with one little piece of that in Cleveland.
There are issues that arise here, though, that I don't think that law enforcement think about. It is disgusting that crime like this happens. But, this is something that we have to kind of expect with emerging technology. We're still at the sort of front end of live streaming and uploading video. When you think of technology historically. And so we're still sort of gripping and grappling with the ethical issues that are surrounding that. And this is terrible. I mean, you know, how many years ago were we subjected to seeing Daniel Pearl being beheaded, you know, by
Pakistan.
Terrorists,
mm-hmm.
you know, it, right. And so we, as a society, as a country, as a world, you know, we have to look at this, but we also have to be very careful about, you know, who we say is allowed to determine what is viewable by the public. You know, during the past 3 days, you know, we published a carefully edited video with disclaimers on YouTube that showed everything but the actual shooting, and YouTube took it down. And as a journalist, to me, I feel uncomfortable when other people get to make that decision on our behalf. You know, we're the fourth estate, and we for the most part are supposed to be the deciders of, you know, what, you know, we get to determine what the news is.
I mean, I totally get that. I totally get that, Chris. But at the same time, do you worry? I mean, this is ubiquitous now, social media, and even if you don't show the moment of death, seeing that man begin to fear for his life and on this ubiquitous platform, do you worry about the effect of that on kids, on society?
Yes, and again, I'm not advocating for it, and I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I think it's terrible, and I think it's a blemish on an otherwise, you know, interesting piece of technology.
Yeah.
But it does raise ethical issues of going above and beyond just, you know, is this appropriate? Is it not? And I don't honestly know the answer to how to fix and address this problem. You know, it took time for Facebook to take the video down, you know, and, you know, and they're having to deal with the publicity fallout of that. But,
yeah.
You know, as a news organization, it's who gets to make these decisions? You know, we really haven't figured that out as a culture yet. And so, you know, and once, you know, and again, it's nobody should be forced to see this. And it's a shame that people probably came across this accidentally.
What a mind-blowing thing. Chris, we're right up against the clock here. I'm very grateful to you for being with us from Cleveland.com, criminal justice editor there, Chris Wernowski in Cleveland. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Facebook video murder and what the world's largest social media platform, Facebook, needs to do now. There are many angles to look at here, but let's think about Facebook for a second. You can join us. What do you think? Does Facebook have any responsibility for the murder of Robert Godwin in Cleveland? Does a big instant platform encourage this madness? And after Facebook Live beatings and rapes and now this murder video, what should Facebook do? And can humans not handle an open platform for broadcasting their behavior anytime, anything? It was very rough to see. I kind of hope you haven't seen it, but maybe you have. We're going to dive on into this, but a couple of calls first. Jama in Nashville. Jama, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I walked into my job, like, break room for lunch, and it's on like ABC Nightly News, and it's everything but the actual gun going off. I just felt assaulted by the news for showing me this. This is not something that I asked for. I just walk into, you know, my life. I'm eating my dinner at work.
Yeah.
And it's just this, like, extreme violence. And then on top of that, it's just something that I feel like by the notoriety that this guy gets for being on the news is going to perpetuate itself.
I mean, and even when it's edited, you can see in this very kindly gentleman's face as it goes from, you know, recognition. At first, he's just being stopped by a stranger, and then he realizes something terrible's happened. I mean, you can see that even if they don't show the really gruesome part. We'll take it right there. Let me get one more. Muhammad in Lincoln, Nebraska. Muhammad, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. I just would like to tell that this crime has been committed intentionally, that he has a criminal background. There is no any doubt about that. No any religion has been or had been tolerated this kind of a crime or any civil society. What technologies we are dealing with is telling us that regardless of what we've been faced, we should not be tolerated that. What I want to say that Facebook, Twitter, or any other social media, we got majority of positive things has happened and we are dealing with and our emotion with. Not even here in the United States, in everywhere in the world.
Yeah. Mohammed, does Facebook have any responsibility here or not?
There is a kind of responsibilities, but we should not blame the technology. We should blame the society, that people who has a criminal background, a criminal mind, and they deal based on that.
Yeah, but this guy, I mean, from what we've read and heard, that he, I mean, we don't know the full train of he's claimed he killed 13 people. All right, but earlier, as we heard on this show, he was seen as a pretty good guy, kind of a social worker, worked with kids. There's the tension, Mohammed. I appreciate your call as well. From Lincoln, Nebraska, Facebook paying attention to this. Yesterday, they had a big developers conference in California, San Jose, and Mark Zuckerberg, CEO, founder, was there talking to all these developers who put software together for Facebook. And there wasn't a lot devoted to this, but it definitely came up. He said his company needs to do more to help prevent tragedies from being broadcast on the social media network. Here was the head of all Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg.
We have a lot more to do here. And we're reminded of this this week by the tragedy in Cleveland. And our hearts go out to the family and friends of Robert Godwin Sr. And we have a lot of work, and we will keep doing all we can to prevent tragedies like this from happening.
We have a lot of work. There it was, duly acknowledged with a very big audience right from the top. But in a way, the very essence of Facebook is up against doing something about this. Zuckerberg, in that very same speech there at the developers conference, he talked about how hard Facebook is working to further a kind of share everything culture for all users. It's in the DNA. Here he was yesterday.
So at last year's F8, we talked about our 10-year roadmap to give everyone in the world the power to share anything they want with anyone.
Okay, there you go. There's the conflict right there. What does Facebook do? What do we do with social media? And the way humans see it, use it, exploit it. Joining me now from San Jose, California, via Skype is Kurt Wagner. He's social media senior editor at Recode. Kurt, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Good to have you from California. And with me in the studio here is Emily Dreifuss. She's a senior staff writer at Wired magazine, covers technology, national affairs, has written a lot about this. Emily Dreifuss, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Emily, what is Facebook up against here? I mean, there's been now this drumbeat. We saw that mentally challenged young man beaten in Chicago. We've seen sexual assault. We've seen from Sweden or somewhere like Facebook Live rape,
yes,
gang rape. And here the criticism is, first it was up there, and then it was up there for a couple of hours,
yeah,
before it came down. And even once they take it down, once it's been up there, others have grabbed it. It's out there now. Can Facebook fix this?
So the challenge to Facebook is enormous. And, you know, I think one of the major criticisms is that Facebook Live and video on Facebook, which has been a major push of the social media company,
yeah,
they have been encouraging everyone from publishers to just your grandma to publish as much video as possible because it keeps people on their website.
This show, on point, we do it.
Exactly.
It's fun when it's done right.
Right. We do it at Wired, too. You know, we have an entire team devoted to,
mm-hmm,
it because when Facebook says run or jump, we,
mm-hmm,
jump.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the major criticisms is that they had to know that videos of this sort would hit the site. They have said over and over again, they are not an arbiter or a curator of news. They're not a media company. They are a mirror on society. They reflect us at our truth, and they want everything, as Zuckerberg has said, which means they're going to get terrible, awful things.
Snuff films.
Exactly.
Effect.
Essentially snuff films. So the fact that they released, you know, the Facebook Live platform and put such an emphasis on video without better protections in place to handle flagging and dealing with taking videos like this down,
mm-hmm,
is a real problem. And you know, it it speaks to an ethos in Silicon Valley: move fast and break things. Mm-hmm. And what they're
and then clean up, fix up, do what you can.
Exactly, and it's the same story with the problem with fake news. You know, they didn't solve the problem before it was a problem. They saw the problem happening. The whole world said it was a problem, and now they have to figure out how to deal with it.
Kurt, do they have a plan?
Well, they have a long-term plan, which is that Facebook and a lot of other tech companies are getting big into artificial intelligence and basically trying to automate all of the review and takedown of this kind of content. And so ideally, you know, a few, I guess, years from now, and probably if we're going to be realistic, Facebook would have an algorithm that could detect what's happening in these videos automatically. And if it came across something that had violence or nudity, it could take that down without ever needing to be flagged by another human and then reviewed by a second human. So Mark Zuckerberg has talked about the fact that Facebook is building this kind of technology, but it's not done yet. And it's not the kind of thing that will be done anytime soon. And when you talk about live video, it creates an even added element of, you know, if you're uploading something, Facebook has to render it and put it on its site. There is a very small window where that technology could be running and try to prevent stuff from being shared at all. Mm-hmm. When something's live, it's really hard to know in the moment what's going on and to take something down. So they have a plan in the sense of they have a vision for how this could be fixed. They don't have a plan in terms of getting that done anytime soon.
We're going to look more closely at what they do, what they may do one day. But a lot of callers on this as well. Emily, Kurt, Jody's calling from Smithville, Tennessee. Jody, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think the man would have gone on his own spree, even if it wasn't for Facebook. I think the number of incidents of this type of occurrence probably is a little bit relatively low. You know, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's, I don't know. I just think the man would have gone on a killing spree with or without Facebook. I think there was something wrong with him.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he was very troubled. I mean, I should say, though, he claimed he'd killed 13 already. Authorities say there's no evidence of that at this point. But you get into this issue of whether look, murderers and criminals, Emily, have for a long time wanted to publicize what they'd done. You know,
exactly.
Look back at Jack the Ripper writing letters to newspapers in London, or, you know, pick your poison there. But this does, you wonder if this evokes a kind of performance violence. Now, Jody says, oh, he would have done it anyway. And maybe he would have, but the question does rise in the mind.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's not fair to say, you know, Facebook encouraged this and is to blame for it. However, you know, Facebook and all social media in the world that we live in right now does encourage this culture of sharing everything and getting feedback, positive or negative. And, you know, it plays into the human psyche. And there are some people who are going to be feeding off of negative feedback. And in this instance, you know, Steve Stevens knew that if he showed this video, he could use it against the woman that he was attempting to threaten.
He made the guy say her name before he killed
exactly.
him.
Exactly. And
tied it to her somehow.
Yeah.
In a meaningless, but nevertheless present way.
Terrible. And he also knew that social media would amplify it. Now, what social media does is that it removes the middleman, you and me. It removes broadcast journalism. When people back in, you know, earlier in the were trying to get this kind of notoriety, they had to send a letter or a video to a newspaper or a TV station.
And the London newspapers could couch it, frame it any way they liked.
Exactly. They could put warnings or TV news could say, we're not going to show this. We think it'll cause trauma, because so much research shows that, you know, exposure to this kind of media violence does create trauma. But Facebook takes all of that away and lets anyone publish anything. And someone as deranged and troubled as Steve Stevens then goes directly to people.
And you get then law enforcement people. I mean, Jody's thinking it might have happened anyway, but the Cleveland police chief is pretty worried about this, the impact of this. He was talking about that again yesterday. Here he was.
I think the people on social media kind of know the power, and I think they know the harm it can do. This is a prime example. This is something that should not have been shared around the world, period.
And it becomes, after a while, a drumbeat. I mean, this was April, Chicago police announcing they'd made an arrest of a 14-year-old boy in connection with the sexual assault of a 15-year-old girl. Here's the report from ABC reporter Stephanie Ramos.
A 14-year-old boy in court today after police say he took part in a disturbing sexual assault of a 15-year-old girl. The attack streamed live on Facebook.
And not just that one, there was also the beating on Facebook live of a mentally challenged man. Here was Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson commenting on the social media use in both of those.
We've seen a couple of acts in this city now in the last few months involving social media, and it just disgusts me that people would look at those videos and not pick up the phone and dial 911. So it makes you wonder, where are we going? What are we doing as a society?
That's something I want to talk about, the fact that people watch this and not everybody reports it. Some people are just watching it. Rachel in Waterloo, Iowa. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is that it is basically just that fact that, you know, if they don't post it on Facebook, then they find some other place. You know, Twitter, you know, lets you post videos. You can go to, you know, 4chan or anywhere else. And the fact remains that, yeah, this is horrible. This is, you know, just unthinkable to, you know, a normal human being. But there's still that audience of people that will watch it. And the people who post it know that people will watch it. And they know that there's a chance that because they're watching it, they're not going to pick up the phone and call 911. They're not going to report this to you know, whoever at Twitter or at Facebook or whatever. They're going to press share and send it on to their friends.
Oh, gosh.
You know, and I mean, and the sad thing is, you know, kind of like Zuckerberg said, you know, Facebook is just a mirror of our society. We have to take a long, hard look at ourselves to understand why is this acceptable to us? Because obviously it is.
Well,
I mean, yeah, it's.
Well, not entirely acceptable, Rachel. I mean, a lot of people are sort of hair on fire about this and have been each time. On the other hand, you're right. It keeps coming. It's out there. People share it. They pass it on. Okay, maybe it would show up somewhere else if it weren't Facebook. But Facebook is the big one here, is the big kahuna. What happens there matters. Brian in Appleton, Wisconsin. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment, and I'd really like to hear the opinions of your guests on the concept that I have. Now, Zuckerberg has a very, very tall order to fill. As you probably will agree, his platform shapes the culture of the world. Ever since the printing press, the ability for a human being to share what is in his or her mind with another human being has advanced and all helped to usher in all the cultural advancements that we've had over the course of humanity.
Yeah, technology matters.
Now that it's happening at light speed, I feel that humanity, I'm an optimist, so I believe humanity is of a good nature more so than of a bad nature. I think that this technology will prove to usher in a hive mind state of the entire globe, that, you know, we can look at this one bad instance or a few bad instances, but I think that the common good and the collective good that this technology will provide humanity in general.
You're saying hive mind, like a beehive, a hive mind, but how does that, and we get that you're an optimist, but how does that necessarily take us to the good?
Hive mind more in the sense that we will usher in the better sides of humanity using this technology of everybody seeing what everybody else is doing. We copy who we are around. So if the entire world can be next to one another as far away as their palm with the phone in their hand, looking at what all the other humans in the world are doing and seek to emulate that, I think that the common good will outweigh these small little blips of bad.
Brian, let us pick that up. We've got a break coming, but we'll do more. Emily, do you share that net with positive good? And does that, even if that's true, does that mean that Facebook doesn't have some responsibility around the things that are magnified that are clearly bad?
Yeah, I think it's hugely complicated. I think it is absolutely true that technology shapes culture. And that is what Facebook could do is make some subtle changes to the way that that video is treated on its website, and those subtle changes could also shape culture. So in this instance, one of the major problems was that even after they had taken the video down, the video had been downloaded and re-uploaded to other sites all over the internet.
That's what happens.
One very simple change that Facebook could make is make it harder to download video.
Why not do that? Because it'd be slightly less popular.
Exactly. But you know, these are the trade-offs. Facebook has to weigh the pros and cons. But your caller is exactly right. You know, this format has been used for a ton of good. I covered the Standing Rock protests, and there were, back before regular broadcast news was there, people on the ground, witnesses, were live streaming what was happening to them.
Yeah.
They captured how they were treated by police.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely, you know, vital.
Make it harder to download. I mean, it's kind of Wild West, or has been.
Yeah.
How can that change? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the Facebook video murder and what the world's largest social media platform, Facebook, needs to do now. Kurt Wagner is with us. He's social media senior editor at Recode, and he's with us from San Jose, California. He was at the big developers conference of Facebook in California just yesterday, where Mark Zuckerberg spoke about this and said they've got a lot of work to do. But then he also said, you know, we want people to be able to share everything on Facebook, and we are now seeing, and have been for a while now, what that means. Emily Dreyfus is with us as well, senior staff writer at Wired magazine. She's all over this. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Has Facebook been lax about taking this stuff down, reining it in? This video was up for a couple of hours before it came down. Is that too much? Is that what? Are you ready to call 911 when you stumble on a live Facebook atrocity? Or do you just watch, share? Where does this go when we're all the audience and we're all producers potentially as well? What should Facebook do here? What's its responsibility? Here in February, Facebook live stream caught the shooting of three people. Here was the report from Chicago's news station WLS.
A two-year-old boy is gunned down in the backseat of a car, the latest child caught in the city's epidemic of gun violence. Two adults also shot. Police say it appears that the gunfire was captured live on Facebook.
I mean, that sounds more like a passerby. So much is getting captured here. Lots of response, Emily, Kurt, from our listeners online here. Destiny says Facebook didn't shoot or make Mr. Stevens do what he did. If anything, it helped answer questions that would have been unanswered, finding the victim with a gunshot wound to the head. Well, okay. Arlo says, if you think about getting into this, we're talking about censorship. And he doesn't want to go there. Lori says, I don't think Facebook is responsible. Hania says, Facebook must make the option to report more visible and user-friendly. Many users are unaware the option even exists. Mm-hmm. And Julie here saying, Facebook Live allows us to be connected and informed. If you don't want to see violence, do something about the violence, not the medium. Lynn in Royal Oak, Michigan. Lynn, you're on the air. Thank you for calling. What do you know?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to post a link to the Senate intelligence testimony about Trump being fed Twitter posts on Facebook, but they grayed out with a note saying, we can't post this. The phone company I work for is regulated as Signal by the FCC.
Yeah.
And social media is regulated as content by the Federal Trade Commission.
Mm-hmm.
We've regulated television and movie business for years because it influences and defines our culture. Facebook needs to man up instead of merely profiting on human behavior.
What would man up mean here, though? To go to the government and say, regulate us? Or to self-regulate?
No, they would obviously, from what they did to me, I know they would never do that voluntarily, but I think it needs to be done to them. They're just the same as a magazine and a movie, a television show, and that regulation has waxed and waned for clear human legal, you know, we're a nation of laws, not of men.
Well, true, but there's a lot of men and women as well, and a lot of them in Silicon Valley who have been very happy to have the internet free of a lot of that. But I take your point, Lynn. The manner of regulation is starkly different. Kurt Wagner, you're right there in Silicon Valley. I mean, every time I'm there, it's not as if you feel appetite there for more government oversight. The whole vision of the internet was to be free and open.
Absolutely. And, you know, your caller brought up a really good point, which is Facebook essentially a media company? And for the longest time, Facebook said, no, we're not. We're simply a technology platform. We are not the arbiters of truth here. We are not controlling what you see and what you don't see. Of course, that's not exactly true. Facebook creates all kind of algorithms that determine what you see and what you don't see. And following the election and all of the fake news drama that's come up since then, they've had to kind of reconsider and say, you know, Mark Zuckerberg has this very, very bold vision for Facebook to really shape the world. And he wrote a letter a couple months ago saying that he wants Facebook to impact communities and to have a positive change. Well, you can't sit back and say, we're just a technology. We're not going to take responsibility for the things that people share, but also have these ambitious goals that he has. So the company is really struggling right now with where to walk that line and where to kind of come out and say, we are going to step in and take these things down because we think they're wrong, but we also want to be this open platform that most of Silicon Valley has been built on. And it's clearly from all the response you've been getting from your listeners, you can see that half of them seem to think it's Facebook's fault and half don't. And there's no simple answer to this whole question.
Anthony in Newton, Massachusetts. Anthony, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. My comment is this. People need to hold Zuckerberg more accountable for this. And what I'm hearing from your guests, it's ridiculous, okay? Look, I appreciate the fact that he's trying to create a platform to have information flow free, but, excuse me. I think they should have realized a long time ago that the minute that you release this type of technology, you're bound to get something like this that happened. And I think after this last election, what happened with all the fake news that went around, I think to myself, like, you know, how can this guy sleep at night knowing that we're making society say that it's okay to even be having this discussion on the air right now, whether or not we have a form of technology that allows people to view, you know, someone being hurt. So I'll take my answer out there.
Anthony, I appreciate your call. Emily, what are you thinking as our caller says, you know, Mark Zuckerberg needs to be held accountable. He's got no conscience here. I mean, you're very tuned into what they are doing.
Yeah.
And yet there's a business dynamic here that's always looking for more eyeballs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the entire conversation we're having is a problem for Mark Zuckerberg, but also for society at large, as we've discussed. And yes, Mark Zuckerberg should be held accountable for the fact that he has created a tool that can be abused. And it is incumbent upon him to do everything that he can to minimize the harm of the potentiality of that abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Fair, given. Mm-hmm. However, it's society's problem to handle dealing with violence.
Those two can dance together.
Totally.
You start magnifying it, putting it out there all over the place. You're the Cleveland police chief saying, we just can't – if we become used to performance murder or something like that.
Yeah.
My God.
So what I think is, you know, this is all an example of Facebook and government needing to work in concert. And one of your earlier callers brought up the potential for regulation. And, you know, Facebook's not going to want to be regulated, but that is something that maybe we as a society should decide, wait, actually, no, you need to be regulated.
Well, how would you do it anyway? Describe how they do it now. You've written about Facebook already having you call it a cavalry of hundreds of thousands of humans whose job is to watch hours of footage and determine if it should be deleted.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like grueling work.
Terrible job.
But how's the system work from flagging? And how does artificial intelligence come into this? They're working on that front.
Yes. So
take us through some of that.
Okay. So Facebook is one of the leaders in the field of artificial intelligence. And that is because in an ideal world, artificial intelligence, as Kurt was saying earlier, would be able to handle this problem. It's not ready at all yet. So because of that, what Facebook does is rely on us, you, me, and everyone else on Facebook to flag images or videos that are inappropriate.
What happens when someone does that?
So when that little flag gets hit, it gets sent to a queue for the hundreds of thousands of people that Facebook employs.
Who are they? Is that all over the world or
Bangalore? Yeah, they're all over the world. They're often in the Philippines. There's a huge amount of them are in the Philippines.
Okay.
And, you know, this is grunt work. They're in an office building somewhere sitting at a desk and they get an alert and then they look and they watch these videos.
Yeah.
And then they decide whether the video is in violation of Facebook's term of service. And if it is, then they take it down. So, you know, Facebook in that moment, its terms of service are sort of the deciding factor of what society decides is appropriate. So we as a people have a big investment in making sure that terms of service is something we agree with.
Right. So look at that in the first place. But then you get to what's flagged. Hundreds of thousands already working on this.
Yeah.
And yet this is so big that they clearly can't keep up with everything. And the flagging doesn't. AI is out there.
Yes.
And that would work faster. There was this interview with Wired last fall, you remind us, where Zuckerberg said that half of all the flags on the Facebook network now come from artificial intelligence as opposed to people. Why didn't they catch the AI monitor right. system, this one?
So that's a really good question. And the AI that is out there is able to flag things like pornography. Things like,
because the amount of flesh or whatever.
Exactly. So, you know, with vision computer learning, you need to have easy and consistent ways for the computer to tell what it is looking at.
Yep.
And you can imagine with nudity and porn, it's kind of obvious to identify a genital, whereas it's not necessarily obvious in a video like Steve Stevens uploaded on Sunday.
He's just talking with a guy.
Just a car and a guy.
Yeah.
And computers right now are not savvy enough to necessarily differentiate what's about to happen to figure out that because it sees a gun, that gun is about to be used, mm-hmm. that this is not a fictional video.
Mm-hmm.
The context cues and understanding that are...
Will it ever be able to understand the rising fear in Robert Godwin's face as he looked at Steve Stevens there?
I think that artificial intelligence researchers will say yes. Everyone that I have spoken to says there is absolutely no reason why computers won't eventually be able to do that. And at that point, you could imagine inserting them into this flagging process at the beginning to flag it so that it doesn't need to be seen by another human user on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steve Stevens' first video wasn't ever flagged. No human saw it.
His first one.
The first one, which he uploaded before the killing, and he said he was going to go out and murder people.
Yeah.
People watched it, but no one flagged it, and the algorithms didn't see it.
Yeah.
And so once the computers get smarter and savvier about hearing a threat, taking it seriously, it would be great if they could step in that position. But then, you know, another someone I think emailed and said that raises the question of censorship. And this is another question that society needs to grapple with. Who do we want to be making this decision? An algorithm that is decided by Mark Zuckerberg, which,
mm-hmm.
you know, is going to make errors, and especially right now when it's not really ready to handle this, it will make lots of errors.
Mm-hmm.
Even last year, you know, it took down the video of the image of Napalm Girl, this iconic
from the Vietnam War era,
exactly.
running down the road naked after the napalm attack, and this was an appeal to humanity, not pornography.
Exactly, but as we were saying, the computer saw nudity, and it is trained to remove nudity. So there's a ton of problems. But yes, to answer your question, eventually AI will be able to do a better job of this.
Kurt, you're there in California. Do you sense that this is something that if Facebook could solve it right now, it would? Or it wants to leave more freedom in its system than that?
Oh, I think if it could solve it today, it certainly would. I mean, there's no real benefit to allowing a video like we saw from the weekend run even for a couple of hours on Facebook, and then the backlash, of course, being a conversation like this and the fact that it's been in the news for the last 72 hours. I don't think that Facebook is of the mindset that it needs to be so open that it's making its user base extremely uncomfortable and exposing them to graphic violence. As Emily pointed out, it's just too far away right now to actually have the technology to do what they envision.
I mean, people using this in all kinds of ways. John emails us, says, my wife and daughter use Facebook Live when in parking decks at night. When approached by potential muggers, they have pointed the phone and said, Facebook Live. So they're kind of hope for a deterrent effect.
Hmm.
Angel in Smithville, Texas. Angel, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that shortly after the video was taken down, one of the posts that I saw was this lady talking about how terrible it was to have seen the video, and it was traumatic. And somebody commented on her post that he had been unable to find the post. And she said, oh, well, let me go find it for you. And she did. She found it, and she reposted it for this person.
Yeah.
And I think that Facebook and social media should have checks, because we do have people of all ages and of all mental disabilities using these platforms. So I do think that they should have checks. But I also think that we need to start holding ourselves responsible, whether it's fake news or whether it's terrible videos that we saw this weekend, we can't keep putting the blame on other people. We can't sit here and say, oh, my gosh, that was terrible. Do you want to see it, too?
Yeah, don't share, don't magnify. But it's, I appreciate your call, Angel, but it is human nature at some level that's being magnified here and not the best side of it. One more, Emmy in Nashville. Emmy, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Of course, I am horrified that people would watch these videos and not report what was ongoing. But my comment is in regards to the bystander effect, which is a psychological problem we've known about for a long time, where when multiple people see a crime, often no one will report it. And my question is, how is this affected by being online? Is this an amplified problem? And what your opinion is on that?
Emily, thank you, Emmy. Are we made more callous, more careless by being online, stream of images going by? Oh, there's a rough one, on we go.
I think so. And I think that, you know, the bystander effect is a really good one to bring up because we know lots of other people are watching. And so then we run the risk of thinking, well, I'm not the one who needs to do something. And this is where design cues on Facebook's behalf mm-hmm. can play a big role, because if they did make the ability to flag for abuse more obvious to users, and perhaps, you know, they could put a banner that says, if you see something you need
something.
To say something. Yep. It's not, don't wait for somebody else to do it. You need to do it. Right now, they don't want to remind you as you are scrolling through your Facebook feed that there are possibly terrible things that could be
right,
happening.
Right.
And so all of that is very much in the periphery, which discourages its use. I also wanted to, your previous caller had, you know, said we need to take responsibility on ourselves.
The sharing part.
And I think that, you know, this and the bystander effect are kind of part of the same coin that we, our human nature interacts with this technology in a certain way. And when we share an image like this, in some ways, it's like a social cachet. We say, I've seen it. Mm-hmm. I will let you see it. It's like a currency, and mm-hmm. we exchange it for attention, even when we think it's bad. And that is something that, you know, we're not going to escape. Social media is not going anywhere. And so, you know, social scientists and psychologists will say it's on us to limit our exposure.
Kurt, do you think we rein it in over time, or we become a kind of grotesque carnival of this?
That's a good question that it kind of freaks me out, actually, to think about. It's hard to imagine, you know, I wrote a story 2 days ago, kind of a column that basically said Facebook should think about pulling back on Facebook Live, and someone responded and said, the genie's out of the bottle. And I have a tough time disagreeing with that. So I'd like to think that it'll get better eventually, but certainly we have made a lot of advancements in tech that make it very hard to pull back.
Everybody tuned in and watching now, thinking about the balance, what should and could be done. Kurt Wagner, very grateful for your help in thinking about that today from RICO, joining us from San Jose. Thanks a lot for being with us, Kurt.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Emily Dreyfus, senior staff writer at Wired Magazine. Wonderful to have you right here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks
Emily.
A lot, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for all your thoughtful inputs today on the air, online. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.